You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. I'm Alex Knight, and I'm joined by Michael Norton, Chief Creative Officer, who is phoning it in, and not in a negative way, but... He's phoning it in from a remote, undisclosed location today. How are you, Michael?
Pretty good. Enjoying my day off.
Oh, poor Ben. I wonder if I would actually like to see the original video of that where he actually does answer. Have you seen that?
Oh, where Affleck answers the question? Like, I haven't seen that. I've just seen all the memes.
I'm actually waiting, because this movie does not officially come out until Friday, right?
It should be out now.
So it'll be, wait, today is Friday.
Yeah.
So I guess it'll be interesting to see, because what I wanted to do was actually wait a week until enough people have actually had a chance to see it so that we can actually generate more reviews to get a better sense of how it's actually doing. But the critics certainly are really picking it apart.
Oh, yeah.
And it just seems like a kind of an incoherent mess.
Yeah, that's what all the reviews are suggesting. It sounds like a turd, an absolute turd.
Well, that was our fear, was it not?
Yeah. I was very skeptical about this movie, and unfortunately, my skepticism has been validated.
Yeah.
Just immense problems with the story, the pacing, the characters. Even some of the acting is suspect.
Really? But it's not that the casting was wrong, right? I mean, all of these are really good actors. I mean, I think Ben Affleck is actually a fine actor. I mean,
yeah, he's a good actor, but I mean, even he can't act his way out of a bad script.
Right.
And
okay,
bad
so you weren't
direction.
Implying that it's the actor's fault here.
No.
You're saying the dialogue and the screenplay is at fault.
Yeah, and obviously all of this ultimately is on Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
Who, let's face it, is a mediocre director at best. He was simply there at the right time to be able to do all the slow-mo stuff. And people were like, whoa, he does that? Let's hire him more.
I am not a fan of David Goyer's writing.
Oh, God. He's
the problem in Hollywood that he's
Oh,
you have a superhero movie that you want to do? Let's call up David Goyer.
Well, that's what DC...
Now, granted, he wasn't the only writer. I mean, I see that there were... multiple people credited for the screenplay, but what IMDb does not paint a picture of is what portion of the screenplay is attributed to which person. Like, did David Goyer write the majority of, like, what we see in this movie? Is that essentially his script, or, you know, so
well,
it's hard to place blame.
It's hard, but at the same time, I mean, for this film, you've basically got Zack Snyder and Goyer at the top. They're the ones calling the shots. They're the ones deciding how this movie played out. So even if somebody wrote some of the screenplay other than Goyer, he's ultimately the one that decided the overall story arc.
Yeah.
In the context of this cinematic universe that they're jump-starting in a single film.
Yes.
That's the other main criticism of the movie. It essentially tries to cram in six Marvel movies worth of cinematic universe development into a single film. Here's Aquaman, here's Cyborg, here's Wonder Woman, here's basically everyone in the Justice League. They just randomly show up. Let's make a Justice League. All right. Like, that's the entire film.
I still want to see it. And the positive things that I've heard is that this is the best on-screen Batman we've ever had. Like, if we could just get a solo movie with Ben Affleck, that could be good.
Well, unfortunately, that isn't even something I would agree with.
Really?
Yeah.
The only thing I've heard is that this Batman is just incredibly violent. And
yes,
some people don't like that version of this Batman.
Well, I'll be blunt. Can I just spoil this?
Go ahead. I already know where you're going with this because I did watch the video that they apparently this Batman does kill.
Yes, Batman straight up murders folks.
That doesn't make any sense.
Which is the least Batman thing ever.
Like, so, are we talking about like going beyond what even Frank Miller's Batman would do?
He kills a bunch of criminals with a machine gun.
That makes no sense.
And artillery fire.
From the Batmobile, or like he doesn't actually pick up a gun, does he?
He picks up a gun and shoots people with it.
What?
Yes.
That is not Batman.
I know.
Batman does not like guns.
Yeah.
This makes no sense because the whole idea of why he wanted to, I mean, there's the thing that where he wants to avenge his parents' death, but because he experienced such a traumatic event as a child at, you know, gunpoint, that is one of the reasons why he doesn't like guns, and he loads them, and he doesn't want anything to do with them.
Yes, and that's what someone who understands Batman as a character would write.
I have a feeling that because I know Ben Affleck is still doing a solo Batman movie, that
if that even happens,
well,
at this point, let's be
I thought it was
realistic.
Confirmed that, and I thought he was going to direct it as well.
Well, they haven't actually confirmed that movie. We know that Wonder Woman is happening. We know that the Justice League movie is happening. Suicide Squad obviously is happening. But anything past that is going to depend on the success or failure of movies already on the roster.
Well, maybe it was just a rumor because I thought I heard something about that Ben Affleck was also going to get
Affleck said he'd like to direct a standalone film about Batman.
And did he not want to bring on the writer from Argo as well?
Possibly. But yeah, nothing has actually been confirmed about that.
Okay.
It's just kind of hearsay and, I'd like to, but nothing's been greenlit yet.
Okay.
I don't think.
No, I think you're right because I checked IMDb just now and there is not even a single entry for this potential Batman movie.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it's just, I'd like this movie to happen. But if this film does poorly, and honestly it probably won't, like people will
I think it's going to make a lot of money regardless.
It might not make as much money as they'd like it to, though, so the box office might not meet their expectations for the film.
Right,
like it certainly won't do Avengers numbers. I don't think so either.
Like, but
they might break a billion if they're lucky.
Yeah,
but that'll be about it. Like it won't get like crazy numbers the way the Marvel films do.
No,
just because the critical response to this film is so negative, and a lot of fans are responding negatively to it. Like they're expecting to see Batman, and they got The Punisher, basically. That's essentially what this version of Batman is. He's the Punisher. He even brands victims with the Bat logo so that when they get thrown in prison.
Oh, we saw that in the trailer.
Yeah. So
that I don't have a problem with. Like, I don't have a problem with Batman breaking bones and crippling people and branding them, but I draw the line at using a gun.
Yeah. Which, of course, some people will say, well, I mean, he already does all this other stuff. What's the big deal? But
actually, that is a big deal.
It is.
We're talking about fundamentally changing a character.
Yep.
It's already been established. You don't get to just do whatever you want with an already established character and not alienate fans.
Yeah, and they've kind of messed with Superman, too. Like, I would say Zack Snyder fundamentally misunderstands Superman. And that's made all the more poignant when you know the fact that Zack Snyder has said on record he would love to make a film based on The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
Superman in this film is basically portrayed as an uncaring god who...
He's too dark. Way too dark.
Who doesn't care about humanity. It's like, well, I'm super and I'm all powerful and invincible, so why should I help anyone? I'm all right. Like, it's this very Randian, like,
sure.
Well, I got through to the top with my effort, so why should I let help anyone else up?
I like Henry Cavill, but this version of Superman bothers me. Even more so than the Man of Steel. He's just so dark, and when I think of Superman as a character,
Superman's a Boy Scout.
Well, I sort of think back to the initial Christopher Reeve movie and the way he was portrayed, and to me that is Superman.
Yeah, exactly. And people will make the argument like, well, it's really difficult to write a compelling story for that character. But the thing is, that's Superman's character, and you can write compelling stories for that character because it's been done before.
That's an excuse to say it can't be done.
It's a crutch.
No.
It's a crutch. Like, you're saying, oh, I don't have the imagination or the creativity to be able to create a compelling story around this very do-gooder Boy Scout character. So I'm just going to change his character to suit my story because I can't think of a way to make it work. But then going back to Marvel again, they've been able to do just that with Captain America, who's a very similar character. Captain America is the Marvel Boy Scout. He's from a different time. He represents American exceptionalism and how you should always do the right thing and so on and so forth, even if it's difficult. And Winter Soldier was all about that. And it was still an incredibly compelling movie, probably the best Marvel movie currently out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like the Winter
Soldier.
Until Civil
War comes out.
This is really disappointing. I mean, can you imagine if they took Captain America's character and then just made him like, he just starts decapitating people with a shield? Like, it would make no sense.
Yeah.
It's like, that is not Captain America.
No.
This isn't Superman.
It would be like the Hulk meditating and doing yoga and never turning into the Hulk.
Yeah.
I'm just Bruce Banner for the entire movie.
Yeah.
Have some chai tea.
Right. I haven't heard anyone talk about Cyborg, but I guess some people don't want to spoil anything. Because obviously this is all set up for the Justice League movie.
The entire movie is one big setup for the Justice League movie. Like, it may as well be a teaser trailer. Right. In fact, that's what some critics have compared it to. Basically said, like, this film is essentially one long, like, oh, look, the Justice League is coming. And another problematic part of the film is Jesse Eisenberg's portrayal of Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Character shift.
One character, and I'm going to paraphrase, but basically, one critic actually said that he was incredibly annoying.
Yeah.
But
The reviews I've read said he's basically trying to channel Heath Ledger's Joker, which feels like a giant misstep.
Well, I didn't draw that comparison, at least from what the little that I saw in the trailer, but it's interesting because some people really find his portrayal annoying and others have said that they didn't mind it. And my view, and again, I have to reserve judgment until I see this movie, but my initial suspicion was that it seemed like they were maybe going for more of a old school style villain approach in his, you know, that he's so quirky and, you know what I mean? Like, sort of mustache twirling.
I suppose, but from what I've read, it sounds like that doesn't actually go down. He's just eccentric for the sake of being eccentric, bunch of tics and things, and the entire time he's just like ridiculously scheming for unspecified reasons. Right. Like, it's not even clear exactly why he wants Batman and Superman to fight, but that's the plan. So yeah, it must happen.
The most annoying part for me was when I watched the trailer and you see Bruce Wayne meet Clark for the first time, and then, you know, Lex steps in, he's like Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent, I love bringing people together, I love it.
Yeah, so terrible. the entire movie is basically that. So if you hated that, that is him throughout the entire film. There's no sudden, oh, I was actually an evil plotting supervillain the entire time. You actually thought I was an eccentric billionaire?
I think what killed it for me is when they released the trailer with Doomsday at the end. I was like, this is way too much. Yep. How is any of this going to make sense?
It doesn't. The whole thing is just a ridiculous mess. It's all over the place. Plus, it's like, they almost seemingly tried to do a Winter Soldier type thing. Like, Winter Soldier had this component that was kind of a political thriller, right?
Sure.
But it handled it really deftly, and you were still really engaged and focused in it, even though it was all about stuff that wasn't things exploding. But with this, they tried to do the same thing, only it ended up being dry, boring, nonsensical. Basically, episode one.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people have drawn the comparisons to the sort of modern day issues that we have right now, you know, in the U.S. specifically with the political system and the campaigns that are going on right now and the increased xenophobia. And, you know, a lot of the things like Bruce Wayne's views, too, about Superman and how we need to eliminate this person. It's just, I can see the comparisons that they're trying to draw, but it seems really heavy-handed.
Oh, yeah. This movie is not subtle at all. It handles the way the metaphors it's trying to use, like a sledgehammer mm-hmm. mixed with a jackhammer mixed with a pneumatic drill.
Sure.
It just crashes through everything and stumbles over itself. There's no subtlety to be found here.
I don't know how you felt about this. I'd like to get your thoughts on how you feel about Alfred in this movie, because it seems like Jeremy Irons' Alfred is, I would say, just from what I've seen in the trailer, it seems like a more accurate version of Alfred, but it seems like he's like he seems like the most human. And it seems like the only guy sort of holding that movie together, because he keeps telling Bruce, like, Superman is not our enemy. And Bruce is like, no, we need to kill him. We need to take him out now. And that one line that Bruce has where he's like, if there's even a 1% chance, we need to take him out. It's like, dude.
Well, and there's the heavy-handed metaphors again. It's like, it's this absolutist, ridiculous.
Well, it's like Donald Trump's view. It's like, if there's even a 1% chance that they're a terrorist, then we should just ban Muslims.
Yeah,
let's build a wall.
Yep, exactly.
It's like, no, that is not reasonable. I think that's about all I can really say about this movie, because I haven't actually seen it yet, so I'm going to try and see it and report back.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if I want to waste the money, to be honest. Yeah. Like, based on what I've heard, it just sounds like a wait for DVD or something.
Maybe. You know, I still haven't seen The Force Awakens, and now it's coming out on Blu-ray in April.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's maybe just time to wait for the Blu-ray.
Yeah, probably.
You know what? Maybe I will just wait for the video release of Batman versus Superman, because did you hear that the Blu-ray release is going to be rated R and it's going to have an extra 30 minutes?
Oh God, I don't know
this
if
this is going to be like a 3.5 hour movie.
30 minutes.
It's going to be like a 3.5 hour movie.
Ugh. I don't think anyone would survive that.
I don't know.
That's like way too much to ask.
Yeah. Well, do we know anything about, just from a technology side of things, do we know if this movie was, do we know how this movie was shot? Was it shot on film or digital?
I think it was digital. They might have done some scenes in IMAX or converted it later. Zack Snyder has never been one for film, as far as I know. Like, he's not one of the directors that's like, yeah, we need to preserve film. Because everything he does is like crazy CGI slow-mo crap. So.
Right. I've been keeping tabs on this whole
digital,
this whole UHD thing that they've been releasing a lot more titles, and it's been interesting learning more about the HDR standard and what, like, actually there was a great podcast on the Twit network, I think it's Home Theater Geeks, and they had one of the Sony execs come on and talk about UHD, and it was a really interesting conversation about from a technical perspective what movies translate well and why some don't actually translate well and why some will not have HDR. So
interesting.
It's really interesting, but again, you know, I keep going back and forth, should I buy a 4K TV, and I still feel like it's a little early for it.
Yeah, I would say probably 6 months.
I'm almost thinking just wait until 2017, because Sony has announced their new lineup of 4K HDR TVs, but they're pretty expensive. Like, 4K TVs are only starting to become affordable now, but now that we've added this whole HDR thing, it's increased the cost of these TVs. And this is just the first generation of hardware.
Yeah.
So why not just wait until next year to see what's happening? Because the UHD titles, I mean, it's not like we have a huge library of them anyway.
Yeah, it's gonna take a while for the dust to settle on that one. I mean, they just came up with this spec. It's
right.
It's not like every TV on the market is using it yet.
I bet so you the new Mad Max movie looks great on 4K with HDR.
Oh, absolutely.
That was one of the initial release titles.
That'll definitely pop.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be very few and far between, basically early adopters only for now. Okay, so they shot some of the film in 65mm IMAX, but it doesn't say what the rest of the film was.
All right. I don't know enough about IMAX technology to know. Like, I know that the IMAX camera is still record to film, like actual real film, but I don't know, do any digital cameras exist? Like, can you do IMAX shooting on a digital camera? I don't know if that's a thing or not.
It might be yes, there is a new 2D digital camera and a 4K 3D digital camera for IMAX.
Is it made by Red?
No. It was developed alongside Vision Research and Able Sin, integrating two Phantom 65 engines.
Whatever.
Transformers Age of Extinction was the first feature film to be partially filmed with the Phantom 65 camera. The first production to use the 2D camera will be Captain America Civil War.
Very nice.
So Civil War will be entirely shot in 2D IMAX, it sounds like.
That's going to look really good.
Both parts of Infinity War will be filmed completely with IMAX 2D.
You know, the other issue, though, with the theater experience is that the projectors and screen technology doesn't get upgraded as often as they should. And I think you've mentioned on a previous episode that they now have laser projectors. Is that right?
Yes, it's a relatively new tech. I think it was Star Wars that ended up being debuted on laser screens. But there's only a handful of theaters on the continent that have it. Yeah, I think it was Star Wars. And J.J. Abrams was basically like, if you want to see this the right way, see it on a laser screen.
Yeah.
But,
Technology has moved so fast now that, of course, I mean, most people can't afford a massive screen. But with the current line of 4K TVs and the advances in home theater stuff, I mean, you would get better picture quality watching the stuff at home than in a theater.
Yeah. Yeah, most likely.
Because those projectors at most of those theaters aren't that great.
No, outside of the Ultra AVX screens here, it's still kind of the old film reel tech. Because the Ultra AVX is full digital.
Right. I keep forgetting that Ultra AVX is a digital standard.
Yeah.
So they're not dealing with actual film.
No, it's all on these swappable hard drives.
But are they still using a projector though?
Yeah, but it's a digital projector.
It's a digital projector, okay. And I wonder what resolution that stuff is at.
Professional grade projectors. 8K. Theaters should be 8K as far as
that's
I know.
A lot.
Or 6.
That is a lot of pixels.
Yep. Well, you need a lot of pixels for high res on a screen that big. Yeah. Especially taking viewing distance into account.
I want a bigger TV. I have a 51-inch TV, and I think the next one, and I don't think I'll go smaller than a 65-inch next time, but also makes me think that maybe the next time I'm in the market for a new TV that I should maybe reevaluate projection, because I've never actually had a projector, and maybe that's something I should look at as well. Although I have a feeling to get the quality of projection that I'm wanting, it's going to be way more expensive.
Hey.
Lost you there.
Yeah.
It's okay. I kept talking and then I finished my thoughts, so we're all good. I don't know how much of that did you hear? I was talking about
not a lot.
Okay. Well, I was just saying that that maybe when I'm in the market for a new TV that I should reevaluate projectors and see where they're at, though I have a feeling they're gonna be much more expensive than buying a new TV.
Yeah.
Because they can get up there.
They can, and if you're looking to get a laser projector, I don't even know if they have a commercially available one yet.
Yeah. The thing is, can you get projectors that do 4K now?
Yes, you can. Sony actually has one. For example, theirs is...
Let's just check in Amazon to see if I can find one.
Hmm. They have a page up, but it just says register for a free evaluation and demo.
On Amazon, they have a Sony VPL VW1100 ES 4K projector listed for $35,000.
Is that all?
It is not sold or fulfilled through Amazon, so I don't know if that's an accurate price, but it might be. 4K resolution, HD to 4K upscaling, SXRD technology. I have no idea what that is. Jesus, it has a massive... You should see a picture of this. It has a massive lens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for those, I think they end up creating like, they can create up to like an 80-inch screen or something.
There are other 4K projectors here that are much less expensive too. Oh, no, never mind. These are all 1080p. It very well may be the case that a 4K projector would cost you that much.
Yeah, it's still fairly early days. 1080p might not be as expensive.
No, they're not. A couple thousand for a good one.
Yeah.
But at that price, for that price range, like if I'm going to spend a couple $1,000, I might as well just get a TV. Just get it.
Yeah.
Just get a 4K
TV. Projectors, LCD panel. Projectors seem to just be way more expensive than TVs.
Yeah, like the current generation. So, like, I still prefer plasma, but obviously that's not even an option for 4K now, as far as I know. But the technology has gone to a point now, I think, with these new UHD TVs where they've really managed to crack down on the white and blacks and getting those really nice. I have seen the latest generation of TVs and I'm pretty impressed with what they've done with them. It's just that when you buy a low-end TV today, like if you buy like a $500 LCD TV, it's still not gonna beat my older plasma TV. But if you are willing to spend $2,000-$3,000, those newer TVs have way better tech, way better panels.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where things go. I mean,
I'm not sure if this whole curved TV thing is going to catch on. Have you seen those Samsung TVs with the curve?
It's a total gimmick. Like I've seen them in the store, and
they
one time
neat.
the guy at the store was like, oh, the viewing angle's just fine. Even if you're at the corners, it's okay. And I'm thinking, yeah, it really isn't, is it? Like, if it's just you, like, I think the curved computer monitors are good. If you're playing a game and you want immersion, but you don't want to shell out $6,000 for a VR setup, I think a nice ultra wide curved monitor is probably okay, but to have a curved HDTV in your living room, if people are sitting all around it, you're kind of creating an inverse viewing curve to the TV because you usually have the couch directly in front of the TV, but then people might be on chairs next to the sofa. And so they're looking at basically the left and right edges of the TV that are curving outward. But the people seated in front of the TV are curved inward.
Right.
So it defeats the entire thing.
No kidding.
Like, it defeats the entire purpose of having one.
You know, the other thing that a lot of people don't talk about is luminance. And I don't think a lot of people look at the actual spec sheet to see I think it's registered in nits. And that's the one thing that a lot of display manufacturers are working towards, getting better white balance and being able to actually display more. And as far as I understand, current display technology is not capable of actually even showing us the amount of white luminance that actual film is capable of. Like, only professional, the ridiculously expensive displays that are calibrated for video post-production that they use in those studios, those are capable of something like, I think, like 10,000 nits, but TVs can't do anywhere near that.
Yeah, and the new iPad Pro is actually pretty close to that.
Really?
Apple said that it's got a Hollywood color gamut, so...
Yeah, well...
It might actually come close to that.
I'd have to look at the detail, the Anon Tech review of the display to find that out, but...
Or DisplayMate usually does
that's right, DisplayMate does
that. Yeah, they usually do a pretty good write-up of that.
Completely forgot about those guys.
Well, you probably haven't heard from them in a while because they've been giving out their best display award to Samsung the past few years.
Yeah, but the Samsung makes panels for Apple, do they not?
They do, but LED panels, not OLED panels, like they use on the Galaxy phones.
And that's still something that it seems like it's, well, we didn't get OLED for this new iPad, so I assume that maybe by 2017 at some point we'll have that worked out.
Most likely.
It feels like for the last couple of years we've been talking about it. It's like, yeah, this is going to be the year we get OLED. And then it just doesn't happen.
Yeah. I think with Apple, they just want to wait until they can get it right, until the display can last just as long as a regular display. Because those issues are still cropping up. Like, if you go into a Best Buy right now and go look at the Samsung booth and take a look at an S6, I guarantee you you'll see screen bleed. Now, that's a demo unit, sure. It's been used a lot, but it's only been used for a year. And it already has screen bleed.
Yeah, that's not good.
So, that's the current state of an AMOLED panel. So,
I didn't realize that they had some of those issues.
Oh, yeah. The thing with AMOLED, or OLED in general, there's an organic component in there, right? So the problem is the organic component begins to break down and die, essentially. So the overall life expectancy of an OLED panel is about half that of the latest LED panel. And they still haven't been able to overcome that. Now, one competing technology that might actually replace OLED is MLED, which is micro LED. And that essentially offers the same benefits as OLED with none of the downsides. And that's actually a technology that Apple has invested in. They actually bought an AMOLED company a year or two ago. So Apple could be hedging their bets. It might not be OLED that we see in the next major revision to the iPhone. It could be AMOLED.
I just found an article. It's a review on DisplayMate that goes into depth about the OLED display tech in the new Samsung Galaxy S7.
Yeah.
And they talk a little bit about how each year they make big strides in reliability in OLED technology. That could be an interesting article. I'll have to read that after. Apparently has much higher display and contrast in ambient light.
Yeah. And that's actually one thing I'm interested to see on the new iPad. The True Tone display.
A bunch of people were saying on Twitter, oh, now that iOS 9.3 has Night Shift, we need that on the Apple TV. And then a bunch of people revolted and like, no, TVs are different. Like, we can't have that. We can't have the screen go orange at night while you're watching movies. No.
Yeah, that does seem a little odd.
I think there are ways around that. Like, I think for me, the biggest complaint about the Apple TV is that there's no dark mode at night. And I think what they should do is just make it automatically gradually shift to a dark color at night. I mean, you could probably just implement Night Shift too if you really wanted to, but when you fire up a video, then just turn it off because we need the TV properly calibrated for that.
Mm.
But I'm actually kind of surprised that the Apple TV does not have a dark mode, because staring at that gray interface on modern TVs, considering how bright modern TVs are, in a complete dark environment. I mean, I don't know about you. I like to watch movies in a controlled environment. I don't turn on my lights. It's complete darkness.
Mm. Yeah, I think we will start to see iOS shift to more of a dark UI, simply because if they are moving to OLED, if they are moving to a system where turning pixels off means improvement in battery life, then they do actually need to make the UI darker, because then they can turn half the screen off if parts of the UI are completely black. And then the energy usage for that device would be cut in half, essentially. Because the thing that takes up the most battery power on a phone is the display.
Mm-hmm.
So with OLED and with a dark UI, you're using half of what you used to use, more or less.
Right. I wonder why manufacturers seem to be oblivious of this fact, too, that displays emit polarized light. So when you look at them with polarized lenses, that they're extremely difficult to look at. Even the iPhone 6, and according to DisplayMate, the iPhone 6 and 6S still have this issue. So that's something I'd like to see somehow addressed. I don't know, technologically speaking, how you do that. But, I mean, a lot of people wear polarized lenses.
They could add some kind of anti-polarization filter to the glass, potentially. But I think part of the problem is they need the screen to be able to look good, mm-hmm. even in sunlight, and adding some kind of filter like that might actually reduce increase the reflectivity of the screen. So while you might be able to see it perfectly with your sunglasses on, adding that kind of filter might actually make it harder to see in direct sunlight if you're not wearing glasses.
According to DisplayMate, they're saying that OLED displays don't emit polarized light.
Hmm.
So that's interesting. It says here, all of the Galaxy OLED displays, including the S6, S7, and Note 5, include a polarizer as part of the quarter wave plate to significantly reduce screen reflectance screen reflectance of ambient light, and it's oriented as the ideal 45 degree angle so you can watch the OLED screen with polarized sunglasses in both portrait and landscape orientations. So that is a nice feature, and all the more reason to move to OLED if they can as soon as possible.
Yeah, I think they're working on it. Either they'll do OLED or AMOLED will be ready and they'll be able to use that, or they use OLED in the meantime. I don't know. But the latest rumors put them as switching to OLED next year. So for the 7S. So we'll have to wait and see.
You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. If you'd like to show your support for the show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/hologramradio and donate a buck or two or whatever you feel comfortable with parting. It is one of the best ways to actually support us, and I can't stress this enough. Because this show is entirely listener-supported, we really do need your help to continue to grow the network, so please do that. You can also subscribe to the show in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And if you're in iTunes, why not leave us a comment or rating? And that actually will help new people discover the show. And it's been a while since we've had a review, so come on. If you haven't reviewed the show, just take 30 seconds. You can also support the show by checking out our sponsors and shopping at Amazon. And of course, most of you already shop at Amazon, so why not use our Amazon links that we've set up for you? You can check those out by going to hologramradio.org/sponsors. We have links for Amazon UK, USA, and Canada. And since there's no additional work on your part other than just clicking the link, so don't be lazy. You can follow the show on Twitter at The Impromptu. If you'd like to check out the other shows on our awesome network, you can go to facebook.com/hologramradio. Check us out on Instagram at Hologram Radio Shows. And if you'd like to chat with either Michael or I individually, you can follow Michael at Zen Impulse on Twitter, and I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us an email the old-fashioned way, send an email to theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and both Michael and I will receive that. So don't be shy, people.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.